This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
What's up, everybody? Oh my goodness. What a day it is today. You got Mark Becker, you got the Rational Revolution. You are in the right place. Hope all is well with you. I hope you enjoyed last week's episode. If you didn't, well, whatever. If you want to listen to it again, Civic Media app, you can look at all of our episodes that we've had. It was Chris Alfheim, state senator-elect. My goodness. And former host of this show. So, you know, we got some big shoes to fill here. But hey, we also have a powerful powerhouse guest today. This dude is the mastermind behind the award-winning political opinion column, The Recombobulation Area, and Civic Media's very own political director, by the way, the one and only Mr. Dan Schaefer. What's up, dude?
Hey, Mark. Good to be with you. Happy to join you here on the Rational Revolution. How's everything going?
It's great, man. It's been a minute. Life is good. How about you?
It's been good. It's been, you know, it's been a discombobulating few weeks, it's happy to be here to recombobulate with you.
Yeah, I'm happy and honored that you're here as well. I have to say one thing before we kind of get going. Before I knew who you were, I followed your work as tens of thousands of people do, or more than that, but one of the things that's cool is, you know, as you become a parent, having validators and just little things to know that you're doing the right thing and in the right place, because it's freaking hard, you know? And one of the things that I could set my clock on Sunday morning is coffee, local news, and a tweet from Dan Schaefer saying, "Good morning, fellow parents."
That's right. That's right. It's been one of my hallmarks of my Twitter presence is greeting all of the other people who are up that early on a weekend morning, because no one else is going to be up at 6 a.m. on a weekend morning other than other parents. So it's, you know, we're all in this together.
Yes. Right? And so that was always really neat to kind of, okay, all right. You know, you're never alone. And so I think that's such a cool little hit that you did. And I think it impacts more people than what you might think.
Well, that's cool to hear. I've had a lot of people tell me that they really enjoy that particular running tweet that I have. I still call it a tweet, but
yeah, absolutely.
Just every Saturday or Sunday morning, which, you know, my wife and I trade off which day we have on the weekends to get up with our daughters. And so it can sometimes be on Saturday, sometimes on Sunday, but I always like to greet all the other parents who are up at ungodly hours with our kids watching Bluey, whatever.
Bluey, yes.
On a early weekend morning, maybe trying to get a couple extra winks while they're watching those Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah, so that's cool stuff, man. So this is the first time we've spoken in a few months, and this is the first time we've spoken since the November election. So, like, what the hell happened?
Well, Donald Trump won again.
Golly.
Yeah, Donald Trump won again, and in Wisconsin, it was one of the close. It was the closest of any of the seven swing states. So, I think that is an interesting part of what happened, and was, you know, kind of the top item in my 10 takeaways column that I wrote the week of the election was that, Wisconsin nearly defied the red wave that was this year's election, and voted to the left of Michigan and Pennsylvania for the first time since 1988, which I think is pretty significant.
Yep.
And then we also, you know, Kamala Harris won more votes in Wisconsin in 2024 than Joe Biden got in 2020. It's just the problem was that Donald Trump was able to reach more people, turn out more voters, and, you know, flip enough of them to give him a narrow margin in the state of Wisconsin. And then, of course, across the country in all seven of the swing states. You know, I think everybody going into the election was saying, yeah, it's a coin flip. It's a toss up. It could go either way. Well, when that coin flips, it's not always like seven different coins are getting flipped. It's kind of one coin flip that's going to, you know, be the direction that the country chooses. And that just so happened to be the direction that is going to send Donald Trump back to the White House for a second term.
Well, it's crazy. You know, in Wisconsin, Donald Trump won, but so did Tammy Baldwin.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that just, I think, underscores how purple we really are, is that, you know, we talked about, even when I was on the other side, we talked about how Obama would win, but then Scott Walker would win, and there would be, right, you know, Trump Baldwin voters and Obama Ribble voters and all these, you know, so it's like, it's kind of crazy how all of that works. What is that?
I think it just goes to show that how evenly divided our state is. And, you know, 2 years ago it was Evers Johnson voters, right? Ugh. And now it's Trump Tammy voters. And I think, you know, it was really interesting to see they both won by 0.86%.
Yeah.
So Tammy Baldwin won by 0.86%. Donald Trump won in Wisconsin by 0.86%. It just goes to show how close things are in Wisconsin and why people compete so much, you know, for those swing voters that, you know, 30,000 one way, 20,000 the other is going to decide, you know, the fate of the state, the fate of the nation sometimes. And it's just, I think we just have, you know, it's now five of the last seven presidential elections in the state of Wisconsin decided by less than 1%.
Yeah.
The other two being the ones with Barack Obama on the ballot. Barack Obama, clearly the most successful presidential candidate in Wisconsin this century. But in every other election, it's been remarkably close. And I don't expect that to change anytime soon, because I think we have, you know, some colliding shifts across the state. I think you're seeing it in your neck of the woods in Green Bay and in and around the Fox Valley and all that. You have, you know, rural communities still moving to the right, still becoming redder and redder each election cycle, especially when Trump's on the ballot. And then you have a number of other, you know, kind of more mid-sized communities across the state and a lot of suburban communities still kind of moving to the left in a lot of ways. So you have, and I think, you know, you saw that in the feature story that I wrote on Green Bay and the Fox Valley before the election too, with some of those kind of colliding forces. And I think those are going to persist in a lot of ways, because I don't think, you know, I think this election showed that there's still room for Republicans to grow their margins in rural areas. And I think there's still areas for Democrats to increase their margins in some of the more, you know, college towns, suburban areas, some of these mid-sized communities in the state that I think tend to get overlooked, that, you know, are continuing over the long term shifting to the left.
Well, and what's interesting is, you know, I'd like to learn a little bit more about how Rebecca Cook was so successful on the western part of the state, and, mm-hmm. you know, how we weren't able to match that in the 8th congressional district. I think, you know, and I'd have to see, I don't know the makeup of the two, is one more red than the other, but I think they're pretty similar. And, you know, how can Democrats take that Rebecca Cook energy and kind of duplicate that throughout the state of Wisconsin? Because, you know, we talked about it with Chris Elfheim at the last episode, that we are a 50-50 state, but we have two out of eight of our congressional seats are held by Democrats. So that's not 50-50 at all. We're getting there, right, you know, in the state assembly, the Senate, but like, how do we work that?
Yeah, I think it's going to, you know, it's going to take some time. And just to get to the comparisons between the third congressional district where Rebecca Cook came up, what was it, about 3%?
She was close. I know.
Yeah, it was like 2-3% behind Derek Van Orden. And then it was more of a double digit margin in the 8th congressional district. And I think that is a much redder district in the 8th. And I think that was, you know, Kristen Lierley, I think, ran a terrific race and was able to, you know, really engage a lot of people up and down the ticket in the district. And I think just having her, you know, kind of connecting a lot of the dots, encouraging a lot of people to run, they, you know, there were every state Senate and state assembly seat in the 8th congressional district had a Democrat running in it for the first time in a very long time. And I think, you know, Kristen Lierley's efforts were no small part of that. But I think that district, it, you know, the way that the districts are drawn, I feel like there should be a district that includes Green Bay and the Fox Valley.
I agree with
that. And right now the Fox Valley is split into two. So you have Oshkosh that's in the 6th congressional district represented by Glenn Grothman. And then you have the Appleton in the 8th congressional district represented by now by Tony Weed. So I think that is, that's certainly part of it, that you have the Fox Valley split. I think if you had, you know, Oshkosh and Appleton in one district, I think you'd have something a little bit more competitive. So I think that that's part of it too. I think, you know, Cook's performance was pretty impressive in the third district.
Yeah.
And I'm really interested to see what she's going to do next. I think there was a story in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel this week indicating she might be lining herself up for another run. I think, you know, in 2 years, it might be, you know, if historical trends continue, you know, the party that's not in the White House tends to do better in the midterms. So perhaps it will be a more Democratic year in 2026 if she does decide to run again. So I think that's interesting. The one that I think Democrats need to pay a little bit more attention to and should be a little bit concerned with based on the results of this election is the first congressional district. That's one that looked like it was going to get more competitive. It was on the DCCC's list of, you know, kind of the red to blue targets. And even though they had some federal spending in that race, Peter Barca did worse in 2024 than Ann Rowe did in 2022. So I really do think that, you know, for one, I think it's a pretty impressive electoral performance from Congressman Brian Stile, for one, and an underwhelming one from Democrat Peter Barca.
Do you think he was the right candidate, though?
District. You know, he had a lot of name recognition in that district, and I think it's been tough for Democrats to find the right candidate. In that, but I also think, you know, you're looking at some of the trends in Kenosha County and some of these, you know, southernmost counties in the state of Wisconsin that have been shifting more Republican in the last few election cycles. So I think that that should be, you know, I think that's a little bit of a cause for concern among Democrats when you're looking both at the statewide formula and at that that part of the state. I think Stile has been, you know, he's certainly not somebody I'm going to agree with on a whole lot of things, but I have have some respect for what he's been able to do from an electoral standpoint. You know, he won by, again, winning by a larger margin this year than 2 years ago, even though Democrats at the, you know, were bringing some dollars into that race is pretty impressive.
Do you think that we got like 30 seconds in before the break, but do you think that a lot of it is that Trump factor?
I do think, and we can get into that after the break.
I would love to.
I do wonder how much of this is Trump specific and how much of it is a, you know, just a larger realignment.
Yeah, because we were talking here with Dan Schaefer, and I want to talk about that. I want to talk about, you know, what Wisconsin can learn from this election, be more like Baldwin. I want to talk about Ben Wickler, and I want to talk about what happens in 2 years with Tony Evers and all that. We're on the Rational Revolution. We'll be right back. Come.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome back, revolutionaries. You got Mark Becker on the Rational Revolution, and we are recombobulating here with Mr. Dan Schaefer, political editor-in-chief extraordinaire, author, all of those things with the recombobulation.
All of
those things,
Mark.
My goodness. Yeah, so we were talking about, on the other side, we were talking about the Trump factor. And my goodness, that's been a thing since 2016. And it's I don't know how we break from that.
Yeah, I think the, you know, he was able to really drive a lot of turnout. And much to my millennial liberal chagrin, now has the the record for most votes in a single presidential election in this election. And I want to break it down this way. This is kind of the way that I've been thinking about it in the wake of this election, is that I think there are kind of two kinds of Republicans. There are the country club Republicans that I think make up a lot of the, you know, the traditional Republicans of the party, the George W. Bush, the Mitt Romney, the Paul Ryan factor of the party. Yep. And then I think you have the Trump Republicans, which I'm going to characterize as the pro wrestling Republicans.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you were at the RNC like I was, you know, you had Hulk Hogan
that
there.
Wild.
You had the guy from the UFC. You had a Kid Rock concert, basically. You had all sorts of this stuff going on. But I think the pro wrestling Republicans have been Trump has tapped into something with this group. And I think it is driving turnout in a way that is really scrambling the preconceived notions of how turnout necessarily works. So I think, you know, they really targeted what us political science dorks will refer to as the low propensity voters, people who don't necessarily vote in every election, might not have voted in the midterms when the gubernatorial race was on the ballot, might not vote in their local elections, but did vote when Trump was on the ballot and do vote when Trump was on the ballot. And I think for so long, there has been this thought among progressives and among people on the left, you know, saying that if only we delivered, you know, this kind of Bernie Sanders style left wing politics, then that would tap into this unseen reservoir of people who don't necessarily vote in every election. Where I think the reality is that we're seeing with Donald Trump is that that hidden reservoir is not Bernie Sanders progressives, but pro wrestling Republicans. And those pro wrestling Republicans who are coming out and voting for Donald Trump. And these are, you know, the numbers have detailed that there's a lot of people who don't necessarily pay that close attention to the news cycle, and people who might not, you know, and I don't want to blame people for that. People are living their lives. They have they're busy. They, you know, you might not have time to sit down and listen to the Rational Revolution. Of course, I would recommend otherwise.
Oh, God, yes. Absolutely.
But I think it is, you know, he has tapped into this group of people who are not necessarily that engaged in American politics from election to election. And a lot of them vote just for Trump. And I think you saw it, you know, in a lot of these swing states where, like Wisconsin, where you saw Trump winning the state, but the Democratic candidate for Senate winning. So you had Tammy Baldwin in Wisconsin, Ruben Gallego in Arizona. I'm blanking on the name of the now senator elect in Michigan. But I think you saw a lot of these races where, you know, it's not necessarily people who are voting Republican, but they're voting Trump.
But I think what's scary about that is that, like, you know, if, because I know you don't want to blame people. I have absolutely no problem doing that. So, you know, like, but it's when you have the people that are some of the low propensity voters, it's and all they're doing is voting for Trump. It might not be the person that will sit down and watch CBS Sunday morning, but it would be the person that is going to be like, yeah, I'll drive halfway across the country and storm the Capitol, you know? So it's like, you know, I worry about these, the voters that are coming out. It's not necessarily like they're not moderates on the right. It's some pretty extreme people.
Yeah, it is definitely some far right aspects, and I think he is able to, you know, to bring people out of the woodwork that may otherwise be voting for some third parties or something like that too. Some of those fringe, you know, kind of like America First, whatever parties that like got involved in the Senate race and whatever. I think that's part of it too. But I think, you know, you wonder if this is going to be a durable coalition. Trump, because I think one of the aspects of Trump, and I think you said there was an interview in the Time magazine just named him person of the year, and they had that interview with him, and Trump in that interview, I was reading it this morning, you know, he didn't really express caring all that much about the anti-trans ads that his campaign ran so many of, and that Republicans, you know, up and down the ticket were running so many of, and in that interview, he's just like, yeah, it's really not that many people. It's not that, you know, we're not that focused on the bathroom stuff or the sports stuff and whatever. Yeah. And I think that helps.
As Nancy Trump. Mace posts pictures of her outside the bathroom in the, you know, Capitol saying, I'm not going to back down. Shut up.
You know? Yeah, exactly. And I think what makes Trump successful is that I don't think he, on a personal level, cares about these loony right-wing social issue obsessions that can be so animating to those voters. But then again, at the same time, you know, members of his administration, obviously members of the Republican Party, are going to be advancing these types of anti-trans, anti-LGBTQ, anti-abortion type of social issue policies. But I don't think Trump himself really you know, I think people can assign their own political views to this. And maybe people who like some of these pro wrestling Republicans that I've been talking about that might not really share the, you know, religious right, conservative views on abortion, on LGBTQ rights, whatever it might be, can just assign their own, you know, belief system to Trump because he is, you know, just constantly a moving target on some of these right. issues. And I think from, you know, the celebrity world that he came from, you know, is going to look more like a moderate compared to some of the other just like absolute right wing freaks on some right. of these issues.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, there's so much about him where I reference on the show my crazy aunt who, like, she doesn't watch the news anymore. She does. She's not involved in any of that. But what she does is she watches this woman every morning who at 7 o'clock says that she gets like prophecies from God. And, you know, and it's so you have all of these people in that world creating all of these different conspiracies of how, you know, they've said that Joe Biden was deceased and Donald Trump is the commander in chief, even though Donald Trump or Biden's the president. Like, so it's people can throw all of this stuff and create Trump to be something that they want, even though he's not that at all.
Right.
It's
dangerous times.
It really is, you know, and we got 30 seconds here, so I'll diatribe here for a little bit. But like one of my biggest frustrations is that I revere the office of the president, you know, and I revere what that office stands for and what it means to be representative at the federal level. And then you see like Carrie Lake getting a communications position and Kimberly Guilfoyle and RFK Jr. You got to, you know, and it's Matt freaking Gaetz as attorney general. There's zero sincerity to do well for the American people that he has. And it's just to cause chaos and own the libs. And it's, you know, when you have someone that believes in chemtrails, but doesn't believe in vaccines and he's in charge of the Food and Drug Administration, that's insane. That is insane. Yeah.
The largest department in the federal government.
Right. Like, and you're like gonna have that guy, yeah. that guy, yeah. it's wild to me. And so I don't know what's going to happen these next 4 years. And I'm not really particularly looking forward to that, but you know, I don't know, but we're going to continue the discussion here. We're going to talk about Wisconsin and what is next in 2 years for this with whatever we got going on here. Dan Schaefer, we got on the Rational Revolution. We'll see you back in just a moment.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Welcome back. We got one more segment here with our dear friend Dan Schaefer, Civic Media's own now. You know, that's a pretty big deal.
That's right. Part of the team. Part of the network.
Hey, baby. That's right.
Right. And I always have, I got to give you a compliment here for your music selections on this show. I'm a big classic rock guy myself, and I always love the classic rock intros.
Those
that
are
you get on the Rational
that
Revolution.
Is the man behind the glass. That is our producer, Todd the God. He's the guy that does that. I say, I don't care what we play as long as we get it. So there's one song that we get in, and it's Bobby McGee, because that was Chris Alfheim's favorite song. And oh, so she played that once ever, and so we still do that. So that's our tip of the cap too. Senator-elect Chris Alfheim, former host. But so Wisconsin's got a lot going on.
A lot going on.
And I got to give you a tip of the cap because you called this like weeks before it happened. So I don't know who the hell your sources are, but they're pretty good. you wrote a little op-ed. You called Ben Wickler the what candidate?
So one of the sources that I talked to when I was reporting this story on Ben Wickler potentially running for DNC chair, they called him the Goldilocks
candidate. That's what it was, the Goldilocks candidate. Yeah. That's right.
So it was like, you know, he's just right in a lot of ways. So he's liked by both progressives and centrists in the party, by big dollar donors and grassroots organizers. So it's just trying to, I think the way that he was characterized by this source was just that he can be the type of person that can really unite the Democratic Party under the big tent that it is, you know, in many ways supposed to be.
Well, and, you know, I, from my time on the Republican side, there's a lot of, you know, when the Republicans got their butts kicked by Obama the last time, but Wisconsin did really well. They tapped Reince Priebus, who was the Republican Party Wisconsin chair, to run the RNC. And I think there's a lot of, you know, there's some secret sauce here in Wisconsin if we have someone really good, which sucks because Ben's really, really good.
Yeah.
I think that would be a loss for us. I mean, it would be great for Democrats all around Wisconsin or all around the United States, but like, whew.
It would certainly leave a vacuum in Wisconsin. There's no doubt. But you know, I think there is his term as state party chair ends this summer, I believe in June.
Yeah.
So it was no guarantee that he was going to be running for another term for state party chair anyway. You know, some of the sources that I was talking to when I was reporting that story mentioned that Wickler is at some point interested in running for statewide office in Wisconsin.
Really?
So whether that would have been, you know, governor in 2 years, whether that would be senator in 2028, you know, Wickler has had some interest in potentially running for something. So maybe he wouldn't be the state party chair after his term ends anyway. So I think it is really interesting that he's jumped into this race, and it does seem like the DNC chair race is going to come down to two Midwesterners. So we're going to have this very Wisconsin versus Minnesota, you know, Midwest, nice passive aggressive, campaign between Ben Wickler, the party chair in Wisconsin, and Ken Martin, the party chair, in Minnesota, who I think has been kind of planning to run for this. He's been part of the DNC. He's been planning to run for this for a while. And I think Wickler, you know, after, you know, kind of the being again, the most successful losing state, you know, which I think is significant, and sending Tammy Baldwin back to the Senate.
It's huge.
And all of that. And I think, you know, Wickler, I do think he really understands how to build parties in a lot of ways. And I think recognizing the state party aspect of this too. You mentioned Reince Priebus, and you know, I talked to a Republican source when I was working on this story as well, who said that the last two more successful RNC chairs were also state party chairs before that. So yeah. Reince Priebus is one example, and then Mike Whatley, is it the current RNC chair? I'm bad with names, but he came from
they have,
the
like,
North
co-chairs
Carolina.
Or whatever the hell, because it's like.
Yeah, because you got to have somebody with the Trump's name as one of them. But like, he was the former state party chair in North Carolina before he became the RNC chair. So I think it does, you know, it is important to recognize that, you know, it's not just like the national fights and all of this. And it is really rebuilding the party and its infrastructure on a state level as well. And Wickler was on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart earlier.
He gave a great interview
to really break a lot of that down. So I'd encourage people to check that out if you want to see what Wickler is saying right now as a part of that.
Yeah, as we're talking with Dan Schaefer here, Civic Media's political director, I that is on my watch list to check out that interview because a couple people texted me. And he's getting a lot of play with, you know, so I think he's got a pretty decent shot. I didn't know that he was potentially looking to run for office in Wisconsin. He would be fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, but I think, you know, and this gets into, you know, kind of what you mentioned about what Governor Evers is going to do. There's kind of like a lot of political futures hinging on some of the decisions that are going to be made over the next 6 months here, you know, and what happens with Wickler's bid for DNC chair, whether Tony Evers chooses to run for a third term. And you know, what that might open up in races for, you know, who might be the next DNC chair or who might run for governor in 2 years. And so I think all of those conversations are in many ways connected.
Are you hearing anything from Evers or what he's going to do?
You know, I don't really know. I think right now it's he's got other priorities. Those of us in the political prognostication game might be interested in what he's going to do in a couple of years. But, you know, next year is the state budget year. He's doing some listening sessions. He was just in Milwaukee a couple of days ago for that. And I think, you know, that will be certainly the priority. I think it's going to be really important at the state level to see what happens once Trump is inaugurated, once he takes office on things like the promises of mass deportation or implementing tariffs or all of these different things. Like, I think that's going to be really important for kind of blue states, purple states who have, Democratic governors to push back on this in a lot of ways. So I imagine that is certainly more of a priority for what the governor is dealing with right now. But I think it's going to be important to, you know, his decision is a big one, and like running for a third term,
he's 72. You know,
he's 70. Well, he'll be 75 in 2026. We actually have the same birthday.
He's 75. Really?
So he'll be 75 in 2026 in November. And so it'll be, you know, and I think that's a huge factor, but
it is a huge factor.
People are going to be tempted to make the Joe Biden comparisons,
right.
But I think it's kind of an unfair one because Joe Biden was really unpopular.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one thing to run, a really unpopular, 80 something year old president versus a very popular, and Charles Franklin always notes this in the Marquette University Law School poll. Tony Evers is probably the most popular politician in the state of Wisconsin.
Really?
And so if 2026 comes around, if it does look like a more favorable year for Democrats, is that something that indicates that Tony Evers should run again? Or does that mean that you kind of open the door for a lot of these other folks who might be interested in a statewide run? And I think there are many. I think that the Democratic bench now is in much better shape than it was in a number of years ago. So some of the names that I had in my report there, he's made it really no secret that he's interested in running for something. Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, someone I'm a huge fan of, being from Milwaukee. I endorsed his bid for county executive back when he ran in 2020. So I think he would be a really interesting candidate. Attorney General Josh Call has made some noise about running. You've got Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, State Senator Kelda Royce had run for governor before. You wonder if she might be interested.
Mandela Barnes is still kicking around.
Mandela Barnes is still working in and around the state. So you've got a lot of people who might be interested in this. And I think some of those names, you know, if Evers does decide to run again, some of those names might be people who would run for state party chair. If Wickler gets the job to run the national party as well. So I think, you know, all of those folks on the who kind of higher up names on the Democratic bench would be really interesting to watch to see what they would do. I don't know. Are any other names come to mind for you for who might be in the mix there?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, you kind of look at, you know, who ran for what, and, you know, what I think that Tom Nelson is kind of, he's settled down. He knows that's where he's at. And, you know, I don't know if Justin Nichols in Manitowoc would do something because he's very well liked. And, you know, I heard he was kicking around something, but I don't know. I think it really depends on what happens. If it's a good year for Democrats, I would almost want Tony Evers to stay the course, because if he is the most popular, Democrat in Wisconsin, we need that rising tide to lift all of the ships from, you know, Assembly to Senate to Congress. And especially if there's no Trump at the top of the ticket, you need someone who is incredibly strong to bring everybody else up. And that is Tony Evers. Go ahead.
And I think that brings an opportunity too, because we've, you know, for those of us who pay a lot of attention to the state legislature, you know, 2026 was always going to be the year that was most likely to flip both chambers.
Yep.
And so do you want, you know, does Tony Evers want a chance to govern with a majority?
Do something.
right. And have a potential Democratic trifecta there. Would that give them a better chance? But again, it's just, for me, it doesn't come back to popularity or, you know, how well liked he is. It's not a Joe Biden comparison, but it's still an age factor. You know, he's still 75 is 75.
Right.
So, you know, and I think a third term, is a more difficult one to run for too. I think we saw that with Tammy Baldwin this year. You know, it's more difficult to ask voters to send you back a third time than it is, you know, just for a simple reelection and whatever it might be too. So I think that's a factor to consider.
Do you hear on the right who's I hear Rebecca Clayfish is lurking and wondering what she wants to do, and you know, anybody else that you hear?
Yeah, Tom Tiffany's name has kind of been around, right. I don't really see him as a really particularly successful statewide candidate. No. He's certainly, you know, kind of getting his name out there a bit more. Yeah, like he's on the Fox Newses and whatever else, and you know, he's been very vocal about, especially like wanting mass deportation, and very vocal on the immigration issue. You know, so that's one, I'll go back to the congressman who I think did especially well. If Brian Stile runs, I think that's a pretty formidable candidate. You know, whether he wants to do that, and he seems to be rising up in the ranks in the House, maybe that's the place for him to stay and potentially, you know, maybe run for Senate in 28 if Ron Johnson doesn't run again, if he wants to stay at the federal level. But I think, you know, just based on some electoral performance, like of Wisconsin's Republican congressman, of those six Wisconsin Republican congressman, Style probably has the best prospects for a statewide run, I would think.
Yeah, and the good thing about Ron Johnson is he supports term limits and he's only going to run twice. So that's cool. Right. Yeah, right. So that's good on him. And now, you know, not 2 years down the road, we got a couple months down the road. We've got a state Supreme Court race, and I mean, when I saw Brad Schimmel's name, I was like, ooh, he's a formidable candidate.
He's a better candidate than Daniel Kelly.
Yes.
Not exactly the highest of bars to clear there.
That's true.
But, you know, considering Daniel Kelly lost two state Supreme Court seats, both by double digits, you know, Brad Schimmel has won a statewide race in Wisconsin.
Multiple times.
He's got that going for him. Wasn't it just the once though?
I thought he was in there twice. Maybe it might not be, but with Jimmy Van Hollen. I don't know. Was it once?
I think it was just the once he was elected 2014, and then he lost to Josh Call in 2018. He's a better candidate than Kelly, and I think, you know, he's run a statewide race before. He knows what he's doing in that regard. But I think a lot of the views that he's espoused on a number of, I think, issues that have been really critical to state Supreme Court races, namely abortion rights, his views on that are maybe not really matching a 2024 electorate, maybe the way that they would have in 2014. So I think, you know, that is certainly going to be a thing that Democrats and liberals and those who are running against him, those who are supporting Judge Susan Crawford, will focus in on.
Well, Dan Schaefer, thank you so much. Our time is up. I appreciate that. We got to keep doing this. We got to make this a regular thing because, man, you are filled with a lot of brilliance. So I appreciate your time. And we'll catch you down the road.
I don't know if it's brilliance, maybe just a lot of hot air, but I appreciate the conversation.
Well, speaking of hot air, I've got a hot take next, so stick around and we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, revolutionaries, one and all. That was Dan Schaefer. He's brilliant, man. And I have to say, I followed Dan for a while. And I'm not like being a shill for the company that I'm here, but the investment to bring someone like that in house, you know, was really impressive. He is a brilliant person, and he covers the news and covers the issues so well, and we are very lucky that he is a part of our roster. So I really hope to use that connection quite a bit, because he can bring a lot of insight and entertainment to your listening ears. So I want to talk about something, and we're going to shift gears a little bit to an issue and something that happened over the last week. And it was a pretty disturbing thing. And it was, that's the murder of Brian Thompson, who's the CEO of United Healthcare. And some of the fallout from that, you know, I talk a lot about the room that we're in and why I give the reasons to people that are Trump supporters that say, why aren't you here? Well, I say that if I was in a room full of Trump supporters, I would look to my right and I would see white nationalists, and I would see, you know, people that like, you know, racist, you know, and then I would look to my left and I would see people that that are banning books, that are telling people who love one another that they shouldn't be able to get married. I would see people that are telling women what they should and shouldn't do with their bodies. And does that represent everybody in that room? No, but the fact that they're in that same room, that means that I would be in the wrong room, you know? And that's kind of how I break it down. And a man was murdered in cold blood on a New York City sidewalk. And some people in the room that I'm in are celebrating like the guy that shot him is Robin Hood. And I'm so disappointed, and I'm kind of angry at that. And here's the thing. This guy was 50 years old. He had two kids, school age kids. He was a husband, and he was murdered. And I wish that the people that are saying this, you know, that says that he's a hero and he's a, you know, I hope you saw the video of what happened, you know, because it's horrible. You know, you can see on the CCTV video of him walking into the picture. On the bottom left-hand corner, the gunman raises his gun, and you can see Brian Thompson stumble. It obviously knocks him off his feet. And then he goes forward a couple more steps and falls as he's being shot multiple times. And then the assailant walks up to him as he's laying there dying and fires the shot that ends his life and then just callously walks away. Like it's horrific. It's horrific. And what frustrates me so much is a month ago, 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago, everybody in the room that we're in was talking about we're not going back. We're going to fight for equality and you know, love, and we're going to fight for justice and truth and all of these things. And then fast forward a month and a half, and we're celebrating this guy being murdered on a sidewalk? Like, no. Now, the rage is justified over the industry. You know, the healthcare in this country is horrible. And you look at United Healthcare, you know, Aetna and all, whatever, Blue Cross Blue Shield, it sucks. It sucks. These companies are picking who lives and who dies. These companies are picking who goes bankrupt and who does not. These companies are picking whose life is fulfilled and whose life struggles. It's not fair. It's not fair. That is completely accurate. To be pissed off, to have rage, to be angry, because the United States is the only darn country in the world that can't figure this stuff out. That can't say, hey, if you have cancer, maybe you shouldn't bankrupt your future generations just to live. I get it. I get it. I get it. I have a pre-existing condition. I have asthma. I have to take an inhaler every day. My mom has diabetes. My dad has diabetes. They are on medications, and the insurance, you know, covers it, I'm sure, begrudgingly. But the fact that people online are celebrating this guy who took it upon himself to be the judge, the jury, and the executioner of someone whose name you had no idea who he was 3 weeks ago, and now you're celebrating. No, this guy is not Robin Hood. This guy is Ted Kaczynski. He's the Unabomber. He killed someone in cold freaking blood. And this guy deserves to never breathe one more breath as a free man in his entire life. He murdered someone. And it's so upsetting to see people on my Facebook feed or on Twitter or people that I know and that have had conversations about, hey, we're not fighting about what's left versus right. We're fighting about what's right versus wrong. Guys, murder, it's wrong. And if you can't understand that, if you can't get past that, get the hell out of the room. Because you don't belong there. The rage over the industry, 1,000%, yes. I get it. I understand it. I live it. Because that the industry sucks. The idea sucks. It's awful. Let's work to change that. And you don't change it by slaughtering someone in the streets, because what I fear is that now that happened. What is next? We're not playing V for Vendetta, guys. That's not how you fix this. That's not how you fix this. We have to do better. We have to do better. That's my message this week. I love you guys. Hang in there. And we'll see you next week on the Rational Revolution.
The national news cycle never stops. But it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.